So welcome to NICHQ's panel on implying quality improvement in public health systems for maternal and child health. I am Marianne McPherson, and it is my pleasure and privilege to moderate this session with my wonderful colleagues. I have nothing to disclose, nor does anyone else on the panel. So before we share with you wonderful learnings from four of NICHQ's projects, I wanted to share with you some information about NICHQ, as well as quality improvement in public health. So NICHQ, for those of you who don't know, is a nonprofit organization. We are actually just down the street if you were to walk for, 35 minutes from Summer Street onto Winter Street. We work towards a mission for bettering children's health and healthcare through quality improvement in service of a vision that all children achieve their optimal health. We currently have four content areas of focus, and the four presentations today, actually, one falls within one of these content areas. So how do we work? As I drop my note. NICHQ is an improvement catalyst. By that, we mean that we work with organizations and individuals who are responsible for improving child health. That typically means healthcare professionals and delivery organizations, foundations, government agencies, and other community organizations. We try to accelerate improvement for children and families by, among other things, convening leading experts, developing innovative approaches, and implementing practical solutions. One of the approaches that we use, and in fact that all of the projects in this panel draw from, is the Breakthrough Series Learning Collaborative Model. In a few moments, I'll actually share with you some overview quality improvement slides. So this is slightly out of order, but not too much. General things to draw your attention to on this slide. This is a model based on the Model for Improvement, as well as the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's specific Breakthrough Series approach. In this approach, groups of teams, generally between 8 and 10 people, come together to work together on improvement of a particular healthcare condition. So in this case, in this panel, childhood obesity, breastfeeding promotion, patient-centered medical home, and newborn hearing screening and follow-up. You can see that the different points on this slide represent different places in the process. So a topic is selected, a group of experts come together to begin to outline what might be the plan for closing the gap between what is best practice or what is known and what is current practice or what is done, so closing that gap. The experts then will outline the series of changes that teams might try to make as they go through their generally 12 to 18 month learning process together. They'll come together either in person or in some cases virtually, usually about three times. Those are the blue boxes. LS is learning session, 1, 2, and 3. And then they will disperse and continue to connect often via online mechanisms, phone calls, webinars, et cetera, during what are called action periods. That's AP 1, 2, and 3. The teams are supported by experts, expert faculty and staff who support them in peer-to-peer networking, coaching, content expertise, and the methods of quality improvement. The learning objectives of the panel, which I knew drew you in today, are here on this slide. I thought I would pause for a moment, recognizing that quality improvement, well, it didn't originate in healthcare, originated in production systems and automobiles and such, but in public health, it's relatively newer, and I think as a good student, it's important to me to define terms. So as I was preparing for this session, I went and looked to see how the American Public Health Association defines quality improvement in public health, and their long definition is on this slide. I won't read it, but I will call out some things that I do think resonate in terms of the work that we do at NICHQ and the presentations you'll hear about today. So there are deliberate and defined processes, such as on APHA, and actually I've been hearing a lot at this conference refer to plan, do, check, act cycles. You will hear us call them plan, do, study, act cycles, but they're essentially ways of planning smaller activities, seeing the results from those, and then rolling them up to implement and sustain activities and bring about changes in systems. QI refers to continuous and ongoing efforts, so not a single point in time, but a process that's driving towards a particular aim or goal. And these are in service of equity and improving the health of populations and the community, core principles of public health. So you can think of this as another set of tools in the public health tool belt to improve population health on a large scale using defined systems and processes. Some hallmarks of quality improvement in public health, based on the last slide and also the work that we do. One is systems-based thinking, so considering the improvement that you're trying to make situated within its larger context. So if we're thinking about childhood obesity prevention in the community, we're bringing together healthcare providers, those in public health, as well as community-based organizations and children and families who are at the center of the work that we're trying to do. QI in public health is focused on the outcome. So what are we trying to achieve? And by outcome here, I don't just mean more kids are breastfeeding at the moment that they are born, but I mean the larger goal that we're trying to achieve in any project on which we're working, a larger population health goal as an outcome. Test small and then scale up, and use data and measurement to track progress over time. The model for improvement that underpins the breakthrough series model that I spoke about earlier has these three key questions of what are we trying to accomplish, how will we know that a change is an improvement, and what change can we make that will result in an improvement. Those three questions, with sequences of, for example, a plan, do, study, act cycle, can be one method to get from this is what we want to achieve in this system towards this outcome, or here's how we might achieve it. With that, I invite you to enjoy the presentations from my colleagues. We will begin with Rachel Vanderkrijk speaking on Collaborate for Healthy Weight. And at the end, I will close with a Q&A, and I invite you all to participate in that. And Shika, on those excellent presentations, I have the opportunity to lead us through just a quick I have the opportunity, moderator's privilege, to present a few themes and then open up to a discussion that I invite you all to participate in. So we have heard about four projects, different in their content focus, similar in some ways in the methods they've used, different in terms of the populations, patients, and families involved. What? I would love for you to come up. Please, I invite you up here, so that especially when we get to the Q&A. Thank you, Tricia. So some of the themes that I have observed, and I certainly invite you to add your own and challenge me on these themes, but as again, reflecting on the title of this session in terms of using quality improvements in public health related to maternal and child health, here are some of the themes that I have pulled out and identified. One is using data to drive change both for key processes and key outcomes related to population health. Second is the importance of community partnerships. A couple of bullets down, you'll see that I have a systems perspective. So again, thinking about partnerships within that system across communities and particularly opening our eyes to new partnerships, bringing on board new or not the usual suspects partners in the work that we're trying to do to improve population health. Third is including parent and family voices, and I would add in a meaningful, authentic way throughout the process of improvement. Third, engaging leaders. I don't know that we focused on this very explicitly in our presentations today, but having leadership on board, again, as key partners in this system, particularly if changes are needed at either a policy level or there's a person who might be needed to really support a culture change, as we've heard about, as well as the power of leadership to free up some key resources. Fourth is considering a systems perspective, as QI allows us to do. There is extreme complexity in a lot of our public health systems. Public health systems are connected to, but are more than, just the clinical care sector or primary care. And we heard about this today, that QI enables change to be made for population health improvement within a particular sector or across multiple sectors. So you heard about primary care setting, the hospital setting, connections to referral systems, as well as integrating primary care, public health, and the community. This also allows for an opportunity to bring sustainable change as well as true culture change when working across and considering an entire system. There's an opportunity, using a systems perspective, to coordinate activities, messages, and measurement. Again, I would offer that that increases our chances of change at the population health level, as well as sustainable change. And finally, one that's not on this slide, but one that came to me as I was sitting and listening and keeping time, was that quality improvement methods in public health can transcend any particular single context or single population health issue that we're concerned about. So it's really a set of tools to apply across areas to improve population health on that grand scale. I know in public health sometimes we're guilty of trying to boil the ocean, and maybe we shouldn't do that at once, but here may be a set of tools and principles and methods and way to bring partners on board that allow us to, I don't know, put the pot over little pieces of the ocean all at once, and eventually maybe the whole thing will boil. And with that really terrible metaphor, I will stop and welcome your questions. Or comments. Great.
If you recall that one of the graphs that I showed you, it's really more the disparity in breastfeeding rates. Okay. So the rate of Black women initiating breastfeeding, for example, compared to Hispanic or white.
Comments? CEO privilege, Charlie.
So, Pamela, where does so where does policy change? So many public health leaders spend their time focusing on policy.
Mm-hmm.
So how does quality improvement fit into the policy realm, or how does policy
you hear if we just talk? No? Okay. So in terms of, I did the hearing screening and follow-up, and a lot of, we have recommendations for when screening, diagnosis, and intervention should happen by, but a lot of the data that some of our first teams were showing, they saw the benefit of, kids that got referred within 6 days have better outcomes than kids that were referred to in 30 days or 6 months. And so some of the governing bodies, JCO, I think is one, developed recommendations based on some of the quality and the lessons learned from the quality improvement. So it can help inform policy, I think. And because we collect data and measurement is so important, that there's really evidence for why these policies are being implemented. Did this come off?
I don't know. Well, it's probably going to be loud, but I bet you can pull it.
No. Okay, Rachel.
I think also in addition to informing policy, I think also quality improvement can help to implement different policies, and that was one of the strategies that I didn't discuss in Collaborate for Healthy Weight, but the idea was around developing and implementing different policies. We learned that policy takes a lot of time, so while teams didn't really see a lot of success in implementing some of the policies that they were designing, they were moving along the process to do so.
I can start. It's a great question, and you're right that we were not displaying data in a way that traditionally we do in public health. Quality improvement often treats data in somewhat different ways, both in terms of what a sample means and how to look at things like significance. So what you did see was some of, particularly in some of the charts that Elaine showed, was around how a median line would start out at a certain point and then shift. I realize I'm not fully answering your question about power. QI is often done in particular samples, so it's a captive sample to begin with. There is work on sort of larger kind of external evaluations and using advanced statistical techniques, which do exist, about which I am not an expert, as you can fully tell, and that we weren't showing on these slides. So A, they exist, and B, often in some of these smaller scale QI initiatives, we'll use different methods to look at the data to detect improvement. But it's really critically important that as we move QI into the public health setting in a bigger way, that we're able to bring not only the language that we use to be able to transcend settings, but also the methods that we use to make sense across settings. Someone else want to do a better job than that? Answering that question?
I think the other thing is the sampling. So just, we didn't get a lot into how teams collect data, but
right.
Typically it's a monthly cross-sectional sample of 10 to 20 charts, so 10 to 20 patients. So it's a little bit different. So there are higher levels of statistical methods, which I also am not next to them. But I think that the difference in sampling is the part of the reason why the non-traditional
I mean, we typically want to use a control chart. So the control, so these were what we call run charts, so that's just data over time. And then with SAMP, we could calculate the control limits, which is sort of three standard errors out. And then there are certain rules of thumb, which really are based on certain standards, physical principles that QI folks tend to use, such as that. So the reason the median changes is there's a rule of thumb that says if we have 5 points going up in a row, that's very, less than 0.05 chance that pattern happened by chance. So those were, there's an underlying assumption of statistics, knowledge of statistics that get translated into rules of thumb, which were reflected in those scripts. But ideally, if we had larger samples and more samples over time, we can present any control limits and then talking more formally as to the way we calculate.
Yeah. Thank you.
Now, my question is about the patient pattern at home. I'm really interested in hearing more about that, but I'm curious how large the 13 practices were, so how many patients you have roughly in total, and also, did you look at whether or not cost or utilization was rising or not?
Both great questions. So, in terms of the practices, there was a great deal of heterogeneity in the practices, so one of the practices is two-provider private practice. I think their patient panel is about 3,000 patients, or maybe four. And then one of the others is the faculty and resident clinic from a large children's hospital. And I actually don't know their panel size, but it's huge. So a lot of heterogeneity in the number. And that's been a lot of the challenge of the work. I mean, I think we've learned a lot in these 13 practices, but some of the challenge has been that the systems are really, really different. I mean, the agility of a two-partner practice is completely different than that of a huge children's hospital, but the supports in the children's hospital are very different, as you can well imagine, but we've learned a lot about that over time. So, and I'd be happy to talk to you. I've talked about this for a long time. I'd be happy to talk to you offline afterwards. And then your second question was around cost and utilization. So, in the broader evaluation of this project, it was initially, it was planned to use a claims database, essentially, so to look at claims data, to look at usage for these practices. There have been some data gathering challenges along the way. When we developed our measure set, we felt that there was another piece to that, and so we didn't do that. We did talk a lot when we developed our measures about whether we should do things like ED visits for patients with asthma and things like that. The challenge was really that those are much more challenging for practices to collect, so it actually came back to the data collection burden, and so we ended up relying on a system that had some challenges.
Other Thank you all so much for coming this morning really early.